Holding Lamed Ches Lamed Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Shemeres Yavam Shenaflo Lanachasim. If you have a Shemeres Yavam, so this woman who's waiting for Yibum Ochalitza, her husband has died, and she comes into possession of some Nachasim. Rashi says she inherited them from her father, for example. So washing the Shemeres Yavam, her father passed away. Well, actually, that
she was and then she became a
Shemeres. No, right now, the Gemara is going to begin with the assumption that it sounds like the wording of the Mishnah implies that she was first the Shemeres Yavam, then the Mechasim come to her. But we're going to discuss in the Gemara the pros and cons of that. So both Bishama and Basil agree that she's able to sell, she's able to sell or give freely from the Nechasim, and whatever she does takes effect. Because they argue in Ksubas about a case of an Arusa, a woman who is betrothed, whose Kiddushin has been done but not yet Nisuin. They argue over there with Shama Basilo whether she's allowed to freely dispose of the Nechasim as she wishes, or Basilo says she shouldn't, but the evidence if she does, then fine. Because the idea is once she gets married, her Nechasim are going to be under the control of her, or not under the control of, but her husband is going to have certain rights to them, as we'll discuss. As we'll discuss soon.
As opposed to
here, she's a Shemeres Yavam, there's even less of that, so therefore everybody agrees it's fine. Mesa, what happens if she dies as a Shemeres Yavam? Maya also the Ksubasov and Nechasim and Nechnasim v'yaitinima. What do you do with the Ksuba and with the Nechasim that go in and out with her? With the Nechasim that go in and out with her, the Gemara is going to assume, and then we'll deal with that assumption later. We have to clarify. There's three different kinds of nechasim that we deal with when we're dealing with marital nechasim. You have the ksuba. There's a certain amount that the husband pledges in the ksuba that the minimum is 200 zuz for a besula, 100 for an almana. That he's obligated to pay that if he divorces her or he dies before her. That's the ksuba. Second of all, you have what's called nichset tzayin barzel. Nichset tzayin barzel is basically, this is possessions that the wife brings into the marriage. The husband has control over them basically as long as they're married. But if they divorce, not just it goes back to her. Actually, what it is the value of them at the time when they got married goes back to her. So it's called tzayin barzel because it's like she's guaranteed it's an iron sheet, it literally means, because she's guaranteed she's guaranteed to get her original investment back, basically.
And if they grow then she gets back
the base, right? As opposed to, but if they lost value, then it means the husband's going to owe her more than yeah. That's nichse tzayin barzel. And then you have nichse melug, melug literally means plucking. Because the idea is the husband, the nechasim themselves remain in the possession of the wife, but the husband has the right to pluck off the payers from them, the proceeds from them, and he's entitled to those as long as they're married.
And the other one,
the nichset tzayin barzel, he has full control over basically, except that payers and guf, except that he owes her the original value of them is still considered hers, and he owes it to her. What they do is the nichset tzayin barzel would actually be written into the ksuba. They would write in that in the ksuba they would write that we do this similarly nowadays. We write in the ksuba nowadays that this is the nedunya, which is the marital assets that she's bringing into the marriage, etc., etc. We say over there in the ksuba the chosen has accepted them upon himself as an obligation to the value of X amount, plus he's adding X amount as the ksuba, and therefore this is the total amount that he owes her if the marriage is dissolved or if he dies. Then his heirs owe her. As opposed to Nichse Melug, where she continues to owe them, he's just entitled to the payers. So now the question becomes, this Shemeres Yavam, when she dies as a Shemeres Yavam, what do we do with her ksuba money from her first husband, from the original husband, and what do we do with the Nechasim, HaNechnasim, the Yotzim Ima, the property, the assets that come in and go out with her, which sounds like it means Nichse Melug. She brings them into the marriage, and then eventually they go out with her when they get divorced. Yes. So what do we do with that? So Bishama says that the heirs of the husband divide them with the heirs of the woman's father, because, as the Gemara is going to talk about, at this point, when she's a Shemeres Yavam, she's called a Sofik Nesua. It's a Suffolk, where we consider it effectively as if it's a Suffolk, as if she's married or not. So if she was married, then her husband would have the right to inherit her. If she wasn't married, her father has the right to. So therefore, it's half and half. Yeah. Right.
So then what happens?
She's dead.
Yeah. Well,
dead. So her estate gets divided between her husband and his heirs and her father and his heirs. Basilul say that no, the nechassim remain in the chazaka of what they are now. What does that mean? Ksuba b'cheskes yoshe abal. The ksuba remains in the chazaka of the husband's heirs because the husband had owed that to her, but she never actually had possession of it.
But it remains with the
yeah. Nechassim anechnasim v'yotzin ima b'cheskes yoshe abal. And the nechassim that go in and out with her, meaning the nechassim lug, those are in the chazaka of Yoshea Av, of the father's heirs, because those were in her chazaka all this time. There's actually a mepharshim of two different ways of learning this statement of Basilel. Are they speaking about three different kinds of property, or are they speaking of two different kinds? The way I just translated it is according to the Rashba, who says nechassim b'chazkasan is a general introduction to what they're going to say, that they say, within the chasim, each one of them goes to their respective chazaka, so therefore the ksuba goes to one and the nechsim will go to the other. As opposed to many other rishonim explain that they're talking about actually three different kinds of property. Mechasim v'chaskasim refers to the nechse tzayn barzel, that those stay in the, that those remain in their chazaka, those were in the chazaka of the husband, so they remain with him. The ksuba goes to Yoshea Baal, and the nechsim will go to the Yoshea Av.
Every other case was about Metalfalim and Karka. Why don't we follow the same question?
Because here it's not a question of Metalfalim versus Karka. Here it's a question of the assets that she brings into the marriage, which she's handing over to her husband to manage for her, basically. That's the Nechset Sein Barzel. Or versus the ones that she retains ownership of. And the husband is entitled to the pater. The Gemara explains in Ksubas, it's one of the takanas that the Chum made, that the husband is entitled to pater in return for the fact, I forget if it's in return for the fact that he supports her, or in return for the fact that if she gets taken captive, that he'll have to redeem her, or whatever. There's a few different things that the husband's entitled to in return for the fact that he has various obligations towards her. Kamsa, if the Yavam actually marries her, so she's not just a Shemeret Yavam, but he actually performed the full Yavam, Harek Ishtel Chaldava, then she's considered his wife for all purposes. Uvilvad Shetek Ksuba Al Nechse Baile Harishan. However, the Ksuba comes out of the assets of her first husband. Some Mepharshim actually say that the Yavam doesn't really write her a separate Ksuba, that she still owed the Ksuba from her first husband. And other Mepharshim say no, it means that he writes to a ksuba. She's owed the ksuba from her first husband as well as the Yavam writes to a ksuba as well. In effect she'd have two ksubas. I mean the first one is not really active anymore, but it's active as now as a document to collect from her husband's heirs, yeah. So the Gemara asks, Mishnah Reisha Delightfully, what's the difference? Why are we saying in the first part of the Mishnah when the Shemeres Yavam is alive that the Shama and Basil agree that the property is fully under the Shemeres Yavam's control and she can do with it whatever she wants? For Mishnah Sefer Delightfully, why in the Sefer are we saying that? Some part of it we don't just say that her Yoshim, which would mean her father's Yoshim, inherit it. We say that it gets split, that some of it goes to the husband, some of it goes to the father. Why?
And in the ratio,
we're just saying that it's all under her control because she has. We consider that all of the nechassim have a chazaka of being hers.
Why do we say that?
Because the Mishnah said that they all agree that she can sell and that she can buy and sell and transact business with those nechassim and do whatever she wants. Which implies that the husband has no chazaka over it. Why, if she dies, all of a sudden, are we saying that some of these nechassim the husband has control over? The difference is the first part of the Mishnah. We were assuming that when we read the Mishnah that we have a case where while she's a Shemeres Yavam, there comes property to her. No, what we're talking about is, well, so yes, We are talking about that, according to Ulla's explanation. We are talking about, in both cases, she's a Shemeres Yavam. The difference is, in the first case, she became a Shemeres Yavam after she was only Niskadish to her first husband. So her first husband, Reuben, was Mekadisher. They did Erusin. Then he died. So she has to do Yibum with one of the brothers. She only did Erusin at that point. And the Sefer is talking about where she'd actually been married to her first husband, and then he died. When Nisuin had been done.
So that's why we speak.
That's the difference.
And the difference, according to Reagan's.
Well, right. So the difference is that even when it comes to an arusa, Beit Shammai holds that she's allowed to transact whatever business she wants with it, a regular arusa. How much more so now when she's only a Shemeres Yavam from being an arusa? Then all the more so then she's even weaker. But in other words, her connection with her new husband is even weaker. As opposed to, or for that matter, her connection with her old husband is weaker because he died. As opposed to, in the second case, we're talking about she was already Nisua.
That's the conclusion of Ulla.
Well, we're gonna now suss it out. We're gonna work it out. The Kasava Ulla Zika Sarusa Isis Safik Arusa. Ulla holds as follows: the Zika that comes from her being an Arusa, where she was an Arusa to her first husband and then he died, that makes her a Safik Arusa. Zikas Nisua, Isa Sophic Nisua. Whereas a Zika from being fully married makes her a Sophic Nisua.
Which is much stronger.
Which is stronger. Well, so we're going to talk about in a minute that we have the Machlokas Neshama Besilil about Arusa, whereas everybody agrees with Nisua that her husband has certain control over the property. So therefore, there's that logical difference.
So Beit Shammai and don't disagree about the Nisua. They just disagree about the Arusa.
So we're saying in the Mishnah they do disagree about the Nesua, but we'll see in a minute why. But as far as the Arusa, in the first part of the Mishnah, everybody agrees. What do we mean by when we say Sophic, by the way, what do we mean by that? Some Mepharshim say that it means literally it's a Sophic, because in the sense that usually with an Erusin, fine, it might happen they never do Nisuin, but it's not likely. Most likely if they did Erusin, they're gonna do Nisuin. Whereas over here you're only talking about a Zika. Not necessarily is he even going to ever follow through with it and do Yibum. He may end up doing Chalitza. Of course you have to do Chalitza, but the point is, there's much less of a chance than there is with a regular Arusa that she's ever going to consummate things with her second husband, with the brother. Therefore we consider her Sophic, Arusa, and Nesua respectively. Other Mepharshim just say, we mean Sophic in the sense that she's not fully an Arusa, or she's not fully a Nesua. Because it's just only a Zika.
There's greater likeliness that she's going to get married if she's an Arusa.
A regular Arusa. Rather than over here, where she's a Shemeres Yavam, and not necessarily is the Yavam ever going to do Yavam with her. What? How do we see that Ulla holds? This the Isak Daitach Vade Arusa Moedim Mesilo Shemecheres V'Nesenes V'Kayim. If you're going to tell me that she's considered because she's a Shemeres Yavam from Erusin, that if we were to consider her Vade Arusa, then what do you mean? How could we say Mesilo agrees that she can buy and sell and do whatever, and then everything is valid? But we learn in a Mishnah in Ksubas, Nakul Anachasim Mishnis Arusa. If a regular Arusa, not a Shemeres Yavam, but a regular Arusa, gets property in her possession after the Erusin, Beit Shammai says she can sell freely. We're not worried about her husband's eventual rights in it. Or Beit Shammai Lo Timker, Beit Shammai says that she should not sell. But everybody agrees that B'di'evit, if she sold, or if she gave away, then fine, B'di'evit, it's okay. So if in our Mishnah we're saying that Beit Shammai agrees that Achila, she can do whatever she wants with it, obviously it can't mean that she's a Vadai Arusa. It has to mean she's a Sophic Arusa, which is weaker than a Vadai Arusa. So a Vadai Arusa, according to Beit Shammai, her husband should have some potential rights on it, therefore l'chatchila she shouldn't be selling the property. But the Yevet, if she did, then fine. Here it's only a Sophic Arusa, because she can do whatever she wants, even l'chatchila according to Beit Shammai. So therefore we see that what Ulla is saying that the Zika from being an Arusa makes her only a Sophic Arusa. So her husband, her potential husband, has even less rights on it than a regular Arusa's husband.
And then we derive that from the fact of the Sophic.
From the fact that we see that Bacilla allows her to sell it freely, Bacilla. Then we say Zikas Nesua is a Sophic Nesua. How do we know that the Zika of when she's married already to her first husband makes her considered now a Sophic Nesua? same logic. If you're going to say that she's considered definitely married, then look at the next part of the Mishnah. What do you mean that Beit Shammai is saying that if it was Minan Nisuin, which again Ullo is explaining the second part of the Mishnah, meaning that she's a Shemir of a Minan Nisuin. And we're saying that Beit Shammai is saying that she should that the husband's heirs and the father's heirs divide the property. What do you mean? Vatnan, we learn in that same Mishnah in Ksubas, Nafula Nechasim Mishnah, if she got Nechasim after she got married, so after she got married, her father died, for example, and she inherited from him. Elu ve'elu moedim, both Beit Shammai and Beit Shammai agree, she makra v'nasna, that if she sold or gave away, Shabal moedim yavala kuchas, that actually the husband has the right to take away that property from the buyers. Because we're talking nuksim alug, he has a right to the payrus of it. She can't go sell it without his permission.
So therefore,
and if we're saying in our Mishnah that Beit Shammai is saying that the Yorsha Baal and the Yorsha Av, each of them has half rights over it, then over there, why would he say that the husband can just take away? We should say that the husband can take away some of it, maybe, but not all of it. El Shmamina Zikas Nesua is a Suffolk Nesua. That's the difference. Therefore, we're saying because here the Zika from being married makes her only a Suffolk Nesua, so therefore, in that case, Beit Shammai will agree that the husband has full rights over the Nechasim. Here, the husband only has half rights. So therefore, she, or rather her representative, her father's family, has rights to the other half. Because she's a Suffolk Nesua. Okay, so far, Ullo's explanation. However, Amalei Rabba, so Rabba asks him, in that case, if that's the reason for the Mishnah, that it's a distinction between whether originally she was an Arusa or originally Nesua, Adam Miflegi Begufo La'acha Misa, then why are Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel arguing on what happens with the actual Kauka itself, with the actual Nechasim themselves after she dies? The Guba Chayeh or the Peiris. Let him argue about what happens while she's still alive, what happens with the Peiris. If we're saying in the second case of the Mishnah, what do you have to mention? That she died. Say in the second case of the Mishnah, she's still alive, but she was a Shemeres Yavam Min HaNisuin, she was married to her first husband. So Beit Shammai is going to say that the Yavam and her split the Peiris because she's Suffolk Nesua, and Beit Hillel would say that the Nechasim v'chaskasa, that everything is in her chazaka.
Without, yeah.
So we can't say that. That's the meaning of the Mishnah. Elo Amar Rabba, Aidi v'Aidi d'Nachlik she Nesua. No, both cases in the Mishnah are talking about where she was in Nesua when she became a Shemeres Yavam. This Zikas Nesua, Oitzah Safek Nesua. And we will go along with what Ullo said, that the Zika from being Nesua makes her a Safek Nesua, as far as these financial matters. The difference is, Reisha de'i kaima, in the Reisha of the Mishnah where she herself is alive, havala ihi vadai in her suffix. She herself is vadai. She actually owns the Keren. However you look at it, she owns the Keren.
Isn't she the suffix?
There's no suffix on her ownership of it.
Her ownership.
Because either way, we're talking nixim alug over here. Either way, she continues to own the Keren, whether she's in a sewer or not.
Means
that she owns the property itself. Her husband would be entitled to the Paris.
To the Paris.
But she definitely owns the actual property.
She can sell it if she wants to.
Well, not necessarily can she sell it if she wants to, but at least we're saying that she definitely owns it. But wait, the point is, the Inhu Suffolk, they, meaning the Yavam and his family, are a Suffolk. Do they have any ownership in it or not? Right now she's only a Suffolk Nesua. They in Suffolk, might be Devadim. And as the usual rule, like we said yesterday, a Suffolk doesn't have the right to take away from a Vadai. So therefore, that's why we're saying in the first part of the Mishnah, since she's alive, fine, she can go ahead and sell it freely. Even though, yes, if she was a Vadai Nesua, we wouldn't allow her to, but because she's only a Suffolk Nesua, their Suffolk ownership of the Peiris cannot prevent her from exercising her Vadai rights over the property.
And she says she's even less than a Suffolk Nesua?
No, she is a Suffolk Nesua, that's what we're saying. Yeah. On the other hand,
why didn't we say she's not a Nesua, even a Suffolk Nesua?
Because if we said she's not a Suffolk Nesua, then if we said she's not a Suffolk Nesua at all, then what are we? Then why Bechlal? So if she dies, why all of a sudden are we saying that the Yavam's heirs have any right to the property? That shows she has to have been some level of Nesua. Sefer, Demetza, the Sefer is talking about she's dead, she doesn't have her chazaka anymore. Halala Borin Lirash, Halala Borin Lirash. So you have two groups of people who want to inherit her. Neither one is more muchzik than the other one right now. Therefore, they divide it. Like we said yesterday, Momen Amut B'Safik, when you have money that's B'Safik and no one has a chazaka, no one person has more of a chazaka than the other, then you split it. Eis V'Abaya. Abaya asks on Rabba, you're telling me Ulvis Shammai and Safik Motzi Midei Vaday? You're telling me according to Bis Shammai, the Safik has no right to take away from the Vaday? Well, it's not, but we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, Nafal Abayis Olav Al Aviv. Suppose that a house collapses on a person together with his father, or Olav Al Merishav, or on a person together with any of the people he could inherit from. So let's say, for example, it could have been, for example, his son who died childless, and therefore the father inherits him, whatever it is. Now, let's stick with the simple example where it was the father and the son to keep things simple.
So all this, the father and the
Marishan is killed? No, not the father and the it's basically you're talking about the heir and the whatever the one who he would be inheriting from. I don't know what the word for it is, but you know what I mean. The one who he'd inherit from. Yeah.
Right.
So now, suppose that the son, the prospective heir, owes money to people. He has a ksuba that he has to pay. He has debts. So what happens? Yoshe ha'ab omrim ha'ben mesrishin v'achakach mesahav. So the heirs of the father argue like this. The son died first, meaning that at the moment he died, he didn't own any of the property, any of the estate. Because he died before his father, he hadn't inherited it yet. Then the father died, v'achakach mesahav, so therefore the father inherits everything, and you, his wife, or his bali chovis, can't collect from the father. And the bali chov, or the wife, omer, ha'av mesrishin, v'achakach mesaben. The father died first, so therefore for a second there the son inherited it, and then the son died, so therefore the estate belongs to him, and therefore we can take our respective cuts from it. What do we do? Bishrama say they split it. So the Bali Chayv or the Bali Chayv are entitled to half to up to half the property. Or Vesilim, Nechasim v'Chaskasin, whereas Vesilim say the Nechasim retain the original Chazaka. The original Chazaka before the house collapsed was that the Nechasim belonged to the father. So therefore, now we continue to assume that. We don't have any reason to assume that the son inherited them for a moment there. So what do we see? V'ha'acha Yosha'a Vader v'Bal Chayv Safik. Here you have the father's heirs are coming based on Vaday. There's no question the father at one time owned this property. The Bali Chayv are coming based on a Safik. Maybe the son, maybe the father died first, and the son inherited it. V'ka'asi Safik u'motzim mide Vaday. And you see, Bishamai is saying that the Safik is able to take away from the Vaday. Therefore, they're entitled to half the estate.
Okay.
So you see, a Safik can take away from a Vaday. So returning to our mission over here, what are you telling me that while she's alive, she has a Vaday ownership on the property, the Yavam only has a Safik, and Bishamai is going to say, therefore, she has full rights over it? We see from that mission or not?
But that may be a mission.
What would be specific about it, though? That's what we have to figure out. The answer is, there is a specific case. Kasavri, Bishama, Shtarha, Omid Ligbos, Kigabri Domi. The difference is that there you have a shtar. The woman has a ksuba, the Bali Chayv have a written shtar. A shtar that's going to be collected is as if it's already collected. Meaning, the shtar has a very strong koyach. It makes it considered as though these people who are holding the shtar, as if they already have ownership of some of the property.
Who's holding the shtar?
The Bal Chayv, for example, before the house, at some point before the house collapsed, the son Reuven had borrowed money from somebody else. He and Yaakov, his father, were in the house together when it collapsed. Now the people he borrowed money from are trying to claim their debt. So what we're saying now is that Bishamai holds because those lenders have a shtar that Reuven owes the money, it's considered as if they already have a chazaka on some of the property, according to Bishamai. As opposed to over here, yeah. Basil would say that Nechasim Achaskasim, they say they wouldn't hold of this shtar or even Ligbus. Yeah. Umanatemra, and where do we get that from? How do we know that Bishamai holds that? It's not, because we learn in a Mishnah in Saita. Mesu Balein Ad Shalei Shasu. Now, suppose that you have a woman who's a Saita, and a woman who's a Saita, and her husband dies before she has a chance to drink the water. Now, we have a Suffolk at that point. Was she Mizana or not? If she was Mizana, if she was Mizana, she would have lost her Ksuba. If not, then she wouldn't. The problem...
Give her the waters or not?
No, that's the thing. We can't give her... The Gemara is going to say in a second. We can't give her the waters because the Pasuk says, the Hevi Ha'isha Se'ishtes Ishtei Lakayim. The man has to bring his wife to the Kayim. If he's dead, he can't bring her. Right, so that's Ma'akiv, in other words, dead. So in this case, you have a Suffolk. Is she entitled to her Ksuba or not? Bishamai says that she's allowed to collect her Ksuba. She doesn't drink because you can't give her to drink now because her husband's dead. So therefore, Misafik, she's allowed to collect her Ksuba. Why? Because she has a shtar. Shtar Oimim Ligbus Kagabu Dami. The fact that she has a shtar gives her a certain chazaka. Or Bishilul Oimim Oishoisis. That was Bishamai. Basil says, no, either they'll have to drink the water, or if they don't drink it, they won't be able to take the ksuba. We might ask, what do you mean, Oishosis? The Hevi Oishis Ishtar, Rahman of Elaka. She can't drink the water at that point, her husband's dead.
Right.
Ella, no, what Basil means, because she can't drink the water, therefore there's no way for her to prove her innocence, therefore she can't get her ksuba.
Well, that's not right. The fact that she cannot prove her innocence
means she has no chazaka. The husband has a chazaka over this money because he owned it to begin with. He just owes it to her.
Right.
She doesn't have a chazaka in it because it was just owed to her.
But we
didn't prove her innocent. In order for her to be able to collect her ksuba, she would have to bring proof that she's entitled to it. She can't bring proof.
I can say you have to give proof in order to...
Tamotzi mechaveira olav.
She's not
Motzi mechaveira. She is Motzi mechaveira. The husband, or the husband's estate at this point, supposedly owes her X amount of money, she has to be able to demonstrate that I'm entitled to collect it. She can't prove that. Because if she was Mizana, then she's not entitled to collect it.
And the bank is not obligated to prove that she's guilty before they keep it?
No, because Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya, on the contrary. If she wants to prove, she wants to take it out from the estate, she will have to prove she's entitled to it. Same as any other case of Hamotzi Mechaber Olav Araya. It is sort of. Possession is 9/10 of the law, they say. Yeah.
But it's not a possession in the short of the head. She hasn't proven...
No, but it's in the possession of the husband. The husband himself has a chazaka over it. Therefore, his heir has inherited that chazaka, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. V'ha'ha'cha the Suffolk. Now, after all, here it's a Suffolk. Suffolk Zanai, Suffolk was Zanai. It's a Suffolk, after all, whether she was Mizana or not. V'ka'asi Suffolk umotzi midevada. And you're still saying that Mishama is saying that she's entitled to collect an oksuba. Ela shmami no shtar o'emid ligbus kagabu damu. So you see from that, the shtar that's going to be collected is as if it's already collected, because she has a shtar, in other words.
Which shtar does she have?
The ksuba.
The ksuba
says that the husband owes her X amount of money if he dies.
Shtar in shape.
Makes a chazaka.
Right. That proves based on my point.
Yeah, well, it proves the point that we were trying to make. It proves the point that we were trying to make, that Beis Shammai holds that a shtar is different. So therefore, in other words, let's recap what we just had over here, because we had Rabba was saying that even Beis Shammai agrees ein safek meitzim midevadei, but we're saying, based on the Mishnah in Bava Basra, that we say, and also buttressing it from the Mishnah in Saita, that if someone has a shtar, then that's not considered a suffix anymore. That's considered they have a certain chazaka. Right. The question the Gemara now asks is, given that you have two Mishnahs, given that you have two Mishnayas that express this idea, why did Abaya choose to ask from the one in Bava Basra? We have the Mishnah in Bava Basra about the house collapsing. We have the one in Saita. Both of them, we see that we find Beis Shammai saying Suffolk Motzi Midevadei.
Right.
With both of them, the answer is the same thing because they have a shtar.
Right.
Why doesn't Abaya ask the question on Rabba from the Mishnah in Soita? Soita is in the same seder as Yevamos. Bava Basra is in a whole another seder. It's in Seder Nezikin. Why is Abaya going all the way afield over there to find an example when he can find right an example from Soita? And the answer is, Dilma Ksubas Ishir Shaini Mishum Chinah. Maybe it's different in the case of Ksuba. One idea why we want to make it easier, for a woman to be able to collect her Ksuba is because of Chain. Chain meaning that we want There's two different things. Rashi over here says that chayin means that you want to make you want to give women an incentive to want to get married. If they know that it's going to be hard for them to collect the uksuba, they may not want to bother. That's one. And the other explanation of chino, which is explained in a few other places, is that it's also you want to make it easier for the woman to collect uksuba, so that she'll be able to remarry. She'll have some possessions, and people will want to marry her. So either way, uksuba is different. Maybe you would say then, but Shammai is going to be makel in making it easier for her to collect uksuba. Therefore, Abaya instead goes all the way afield to Nezikin and finds that one about the house collapsing, where there we're saying you have not just a woman with a ksuba, you also have Baalei Choyves. There's no issue of chayin over there. And yet we see that Beit Shammai is allowing them to collect on the basis of their shtar. So therefore, that's why Abaya asks from that one, and therefore the answer comes back that even in that case we're saying that the shtar, rather than from Saita, yeah. Okay. The Gemara asks, "V'lo yispik suba de masnisin." Why doesn't Abaya just ask from our very own Mishnah? In our own Mishnah, we seem to be saying that when the woman dies as a shemeres yavam, we said that we're saying what happens to the ksuba, to her ksuba, the ksuba that she would have gotten from her first husband. So we're saying that the Mishnah seems to be saying that Mishamai says that the two sets of heirs split it. The Yorshei HaBaal and the Yorshei HaAv, where Basil says that it goes to Yorshei HaBaal. So we see from that that Beit Shammai is allowing the Yorshei HaBaal, even though they're a Suffolk, even though we're saying she's Suffolk Nesua, we're still allowing them to collect half. So why doesn't Abaya ask from our very own Mishnah that Beit Shammai allows Suffolk to take away from Abaday? The answer is Loi Pligi. In fact, in our Mishnah, Beit Shammai does not argue about the disposition of the Ksuba. They argue about the disposition of the other nechassim, but not about the ksuba.
The ksuba goes to
the Yorshei HaBaal, we said. The Baal is the one who's muchzik in it. Her original husband is the one who's muchzik in the ksuba, right, because she's the one who would have had to collect it. The Gemara says, "V'loy," they're telling me they don't argue. V'ha'katani, the Mishnah had said, "Meisa Maya also b'ksuba, so b'nechasim b'nechasim b'yaitanima." The Mishnah had said, "What do you do if she died? What do you do with her ksuba and with the nechasim that go in and out with her, meaning the nifsei malug?" No, that's what we're talking about when she died. And we say, "B'shamayim yachloiku yorsha b'alim yorsha," that B'shamay is saying the two sets of heirs split it, or "B'silulaim nechasim b'chazkasim," and B'silul say that the nechasim stay in their chazaka, that the ksuba goes to the yorsha b'al, to the husband's heirs. So you see that it sounds like Ms. Shammai are arguing about the ksuba as well. Because the Mishnah started by asking, what do you do?
After she passes away, says that they go back to...
That they split the ksuba. It sounds like they're saying he split the ksuba and all of the other property between the two, between the husband's heirs and between the husband's heirs and her heirs, meaning her father's family. Yeah.
And Beis Hillel
is saying that each type of nechassim goes to the chazaka that it had now. The ksuba is in the chazaka of the Baal because she hasn't collected it yet. The nixim lug we say go are in her chazaka because she owned them all the time. Right. And the nixim tzayin barzol depends on the two different mefarshim, well, how we understand the Mishnah, whether they were saying chassim v'chazkasim is referring to nixim lug or nixim tzayin barzol, or whether it was a generic statement. Anyway, it sounds like they're arguing about the ksuba as well. Now, the answer is hachi kamar, meisa maya also with ksuba. So the Mishnah starts by asking like this: what happens if she dies? What do you do with her ksuba? The shavka, and then the Mishnah leaves alone the ksuba. We're not going to deal with the ksuba for the moment. Let's deal with the other nechassim. And from what we see, from what the Sibyl says about the ksuba, Beit Shammai will agree to that as well.
So they don't disagree
on the ksuba.
But they disagree on all the other
nechassim. Right. So nechassim and nechnasim ve'yitzim ima b'shamayim yachloiku yorsha b'alim yorsha av. So the nechassim lug b'shamayim is saying the two sets of heirs split. Or b'shamayim nechassim v'chazkasim, and then b'shamayim will say that nechassim go according to the chazaka. But everybody agrees on the ksuba that it goes to the that it goes to the that 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 the ksuba goes to the husband. Goes to the yorsha b'al.
Depends on the ksuba.
Yep.
There's no mention of the ksuba.
Yeah, so they're not arguing on the ksuba. So therefore you don't have a case of sofek ma'isim de'vade. Yeah. In fact, we can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says that the Yoshim of the husband should split the property with the Yoshe Av, which implies, with implies like they're sort of secondary.
The
Yoshim of the woman.
Of the wife.
Of the woman.
Right.
Yeah. So the implication is that the Yoshe Av are the main heirs, and the Yoshe Baal get a certain portion out of that also, according to Beis Shammai. But like Katana, Yoshe Av and Yoshe Baal, as opposed to if we were to say, according to Beis Shammai, that the Ksuba goes, if we were to say, according to Beis Shammai, that the Ksuba is also considered a Suffolk, and each one has a right to it, then we would say the other way around. The Yoshe Av get with the Yoshe Baal, meaning that the Yoshe Baal are sort of like the more important ones, because they're entitled to they're entitled to certain nechassim of hers, in particular the ksuba. But the Yoshe Av gets a section of that. The fact that we don't say that implies that they're not arguing about the ksuba.
And the ksuba goes back to the wife.
Right. Okay, so far we had two answers. We had Ula's answer and we had Rabba's answer, what the Mishnah is talking about. We had Ula's answer that the two cases in the Mishnah is one she was in Arusa and one she was in Nesua. We had Rabba's answer that both of them she was in Nesua, but one she's alive and one she's dead, and therefore that makes a difference as far as the Chazakah. Answer number three, Abaya Amar, Reisha Denafka to why the two parts of the Mishnah are different. Why in the first part of the Mishnah are we saying she has full Chazakah, and in the second one we're saying there seems to be a doubt about where the Chazakah lies. Abaya Amar, Reisha Denafka Lakshi Shemeres Yavam. All this time we were assuming that what happened was while she Shemeres Yavam, while her first husband died, then her father or whoever it was died and left her property. Not necessarily. The first part of the Mishnah is talking about where the property indeed came into her possession while she's a Shemeres Yavam. Seif l'nach l'akshi tacht of the Baal. As opposed to the second part of the Mishnah is talking about where the Nechassim came into her possession while she was still married to her first husband.
So the first part of the Mishnah, I was saying, in answer number three,
her husband died, then her father died.
Right.
Whereas the Sefer is talking about the other way around. First her father died, and then her husband died. Rekasavra, Abaya yada ki yada. Abaya holds that his hand is just like hers. That in other words, when she's married, then she and her husband have equal control over the property. If she's now instead now as a Nesua, her husband died, and now the Yavam only has a Zika, then his hand is not as strong as hers. The Nechassim remain in her Chazakah. As opposed to, that's according to Beis Hillel. According to Beis Shammai, rather, we would say that no. What happens is, according to Beis Hillel, in other words, it would be that when they're married, the husband and her have equal control. So when she's only a Shemeres Yavam, the husband has less control. The Yavam, rather, has less control. Therefore, Nechassim b'chaskasa. On the other hand, Beis Shammai would hold that when she's married, her husband has greater control. Yadei adifa miyadei, Rashi says. His control is stronger than hers. Therefore, when she's a Shemeres Yavam, you downgrade his, the Yavam, and it's equal to hers.
When she's married, according to Beis Shammai, her control is... Her husband's control is greater.
But when she's only a Shemeres Yavam, then the Yavam's control is equal to hers. And therefore they divide. As opposed to the Yavam is weaker, yeah. Amale Rava, Ida Nachli Lakshi Mitacht of the Baal, if she inherited the property...
...say that her control is the same when she's just a suffix swaz.
Okay, but even so, you know...
It seems to be going against what we just said. Okay, so
we could say that Suffolk Nesua, but nevertheless, it's a Suffolk, but it's not Suffolk, but nevertheless, he has...
to be equal to us, I mean, her possession is established, or Yavam's possession, or future Yavam, has not been established. How can we say it's the same?
Okay.
We said before that it's a Suffolk.
On that basis, of that Suffolk, we can say that it's equal, that it's equal.
But
because we're saying that ordinarily, if she were married, her husband would have greater control.
But that's different. If she was married, yes, I agree, but she's not married.
Okay, but we're weakening the Yavam, the Dialovam and Edim is Kenadin, basically. We can weaken his power, but not so much that we would say it's less than hers.
So what do we say to Suffolk? I mean...
First of all, who says necessarily that we're accepting what we said before, that we call a Suffolk Nesua?
Okay, but let's say we do accept it, and we say, but I'm always before a Suffolk. So then, now we're saying that a Suffolk is an equal hand as a Vada.
But that's the thing, we're not really dealing with Suffolk or Vada over here.
We're
in a sense it is, but since there's a Zika, we're saying that maybe that gives him so certain, Maybe that gives him certain rights. But just like we said before, there's a possibility that if we say yesh zika, means that it's actually considered like a marital relationship,
right,
as far as the dinim of Issa v'Heter.
Right.
Similarly, we might be saying over here, basically, that the fact that there's a zika establishes a certain monetary...
So we should have said that in the...
Okay, that was a different opinion. Before, we could have been saying whether yesh zika or ain zika, even if we say yesh zika as far as Issa v'Heter, nevertheless, maybe it's not strong enough as far as dinim ominous. Here, we might be saying it's, they're the same kind of thing. Amalei Rava, Ida Nachli Lakshiv talked of the Baal. What are you talking about? If the property came into her possession while she's still married, the Kolamalei pligid the Yada Adi from Yada. Then everybody agrees he has greater control than her. Ella, no. Let's try that again.
If she
inherited property while she's married, there's no question that her husband has a greater degree of control over it. Ella, it sounds like we're saying that Bishamai would agree to that, but Basila wouldn't.
That's right.
Ella, I did enough to look. So no, let's try. Both cases are talking about that the property that she inherited the property while she's a Shemeres Yavam. The difference is Reisha to Ovid B'Maimer, Sefer to Ovid B'Maimer. The difference is the Reisha would be that the Yavam had not yet done Maimer, which we said that Maimer is sort of like Kiddushin, and the Sefer, as he did.
So we're reaching the Maimer point because we cannot say that it's a regular Yavam. It doesn't make sense.
Okay. Yeah. And the point is, because Sava Rava, Maimer, Lebes Shammai, it's a Vaday Arusa, the Sufik. The suffix Nesuha. Rava holds like this. When, according to Bishamai, when you do Maimer, we learned back in Dach Chotef,
right,
that that according to Bishamai, Maimer is considered almost like a degree of Nesuin.
Right.
So therefore, we're saying that it makes her a definite Arusa,
right,
and it makes her a suffix Nesuha.
Right.
What does that mean? Vade Arusa Lidches Petzara. It makes her a definite Arusa insofar as now her Tzara is definitely moved away, is definitely pushed away, according to Bishamai, her Tzara is definitely pushed away from doing Yibum. That's why we have the case over there of the two sisters, where we said over there that once you do Maimer with one of them, according to Bishamai, the other one is definitely out of the running. The Suffolk Nesua lach like when a chasim, and according to Bishamai, it makes her a Suffolk Nesua in the sense that because of the Suffolk, each of them is entitled to have.
Bishamai says she's a Vada Yarusa and a Suffolk Nesua.
Yeah.
And Hillel,
and Basil would be saying that the mimer doesn't even do that. Yeah. Maybe it makes it a sophic arusa.
That's logical, because without a mimer, it's difficult to.
Okay. Well, we have three different possibilities to choose from. Itzman v'shmeidir Rabbi Lazar kavaseidir Rava. In the name of Rabbi Lazar, now the Gemara is going to point out that we actually find Uli Amiroyim who say the same thing as Abaye and Rava. In the name of Rabbi Lazar, they said, according to Rava's explanation, the Itzman v'shmeidir Rabbi Yosi b'chanina kavaseidir Abaye, whereas they said in the name of Rabbi Yosi b'chanina, like what Abaye says.
So it's not a machlokes
of Uli Amiroyim. Yeah. Question is, umi omer Rabbi Lazar achi? Did Rabbi Lazar really say like that, like Rava, that you're going to say that according to Bishamai, Maimer makes a vaday arusa of a sofik nesua? But omer Rabbi Lazar, Maimer of Bishamai in a koina ela lutches b'tzara bovad. We had before when we had the discussion of Maimer according to Bishamai that he specifically said all that Maimer accomplished is Rabbi Lazar, the same Rabbi Lazar,
the Rabbi Yechanan.
So he specifically says that Maimer, according to Bishamai, is only koine insofar as it pushes away the Tzara from being in the running for Yibam HaChalitza.
Yes.
Okay, the Gemara answers April. Fine, flip them around then. It's not that Rabbi Lazar holds like Abaya, Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina holds like Rava. The Iboy Seima, or another possibility, La'olam Loi Tepuch, you don't need to flip them around. Because, Amalak Rabbi Lazar, because Rabbi Lazar can tell you like this, Ki Amri Ana, when I say that Maimer, according to Beit Shammai, is only Kona as far as being Doicha the Tzara, I'm not even talking about the financial aspects of it. What I mean is, the Leisagi La Beget, Ela Debori Nami Chalitza. What I mean is, it's not considered Nisurin to the extent that you could dissolve it with a get. You would need Chalitza as well. Right. Lachlik with Nechasim, the Leikoni, Miyamri. I didn't say anything about not being able to get a share of the Nechasim. Omer Papa, the Yukta de Maslisin Kavaseja Abaya. We can see from analyzing the words of the Mishnah according to Abaya, rather than according to Rava. That the difference is whether we're talking about whether it was before she got married versus whether it was before she got married or not, but whether it was when she was married versus afterwards when her husband died. We can see from the words of the Mishnah why that there's that difference. But Afagab B'Kasha Mason. Now, even though it is true that we have the question, why are we mentioning the case when she's dead? Because, like we said before, we could have had the same machlokas when she's alive. But still, even with that, you can see there's a certain wording that the Mishnah uses that seems to imply that there's a difference between whether the inheritance came to her while she was married versus after her husband's dead. Why? Because the Mishnah hadn't just used the word nichsei melug. The Mishnah had used the expression the nechasim that come in and go out with her. What is that? And we said that that's what the machlokas is. My nechnasim and my yotzim. What do we mean? They come in and they go out. Lav nechnasim l'rishos habal v'yotzim l'rishos habal l'rishos ha'av. Presumably that means they came into the possession of the husband because she got these nechasim while she was married. That, which is what Abaya is saying, that the Sefer is talking about. Then the husband died, and now they leave his reshus and go to her own reshus, meaning, in other words, that therefore, if she dies at that point, then they belong to her father.
That's the implication.
That's the implication. There's nothing to yotzin. Yeah. Afagav v'kasha mesa. And, okay, you would still say, though, it is questionable then why the Mishnah uses the case that she's dead. It's true, you could ask why are they arguing then with Shama Basilo about the case where she died and they're arguing what to do about the inheritance itself. Let them argue when she's alive and argue who gets the Paris. Okay, but Tulei Midi, there's nothing more to say. Okay, you have a question why you uses the case of Mesa. But based on that phrase, Nechnos and Yotzin clearly seems to indicate, according to Abaya.
But it's when she's married and after...
And versus after her husband died. Now, the question is... according to Abaya's explanation, we don't really need Mesa. But okay, it's a question.
She passes away.
Right. Yeah, you could have the same case where she's alive as well. But the truth is, I mean, Tosfos points out that on the face of it, you could ask the same question on Rava as well. The difference is, okay, you could say that there's a difference between whether Maimer was done or not. Yeah, that makes enough of a difference. But yeah. Now, Tosfos points out an interesting thing from Halachas Gedolos. Usually, in most of Shas, we usually say the Halacha is like Rava. There's only six cases we say the Halacha is like Abaya. How about over here? Now, Abaya and Rava primarily are arguing about what the Shammai holds, but by implication, they're also arguing about what Basila holds, about this business of Yadei Ki Yadei, Yadei Adi from Yadei, etc. The Papa is pointing out the Mishnah seems to support Abaya's view. Does that mean the Halacha is like Abaya? Or does it mean, no, it's a very nice diuk from the Mishnah, but the Halacha is still like Rava?
The Papa seems to imply that the Halacha is like Abaya?
Yeah.
Because
he says that the Mishnah proves his point. Or okay, maybe let's not even say forget about the Mishnah proving his point. Since we have Rav Papa, who's from the next generation, saying that what Abaya is saying is correct and proving it from the Mishnah, maybe on that basis the halacha should be like Abaya. We usually say halacha kabatzroi. We usually say from the time of Abaya and Rava and on, usually the halacha is like later authorities. So in fact, Rabbi Hodoi Goin and Halachas Pesukas Paskins like Abaya in this case. It's true, it's not one of the six cases where the Halachas like Abaya, but over here, we're saying, when do we say the six cases are the cases where only Abaya and Rava are arguing and nobody later whereas here we have Rapapa getting into it. Rapapa is the next generation. He was their Talmud. Primarily he was a Talmud of Abaya, but he also went by Rava. As opposed to other Rishonim Paskin like Rava as usual, they say fine. Rav Papa says, but that's neither here nor there. And it's a very nice deal from the Mishnah. Okay, but still, you know, it's a deal. It's not a solid proof. And the Mishnah had said Kansarei Chulah. The Mishnah had said that if the Yavam marries the Yavama, then she's considered his wife for all purposes. Lamaihilasa. What do we mean? I mean, obviously she's his wife. What do we mean? It means, first of all, that if he wants to divorce her after the Yibum is done, then he does it with a get. And number two, that he's allowed to remarry her. The question is, Megarsha Beget Pshita? Well, of course he divorces her with a get. Why would you think he'd do Chalitza? The answer is, yes, but I would think otherwise. The Pasuk says that he should take her for a wife and he should be miyab of her. So even after he takes her for a wife, she's still called a Yavama. for a wife, and do Yibum, the Yibma, which means that he's still, that she's still called a Yibama. So we would think, for that, in that case, we still consider her as if she's a Yivama, in a certain sense. But Chalitza ain't beget loy. Maybe then in that case, to dissolve the marriage afterwards, you need only Chalitza, not a get. Maybe you need both. But Samash one, that's the Chiddush. That's
the Chiddush.
We're going to say in a second we'll talk about in a second what the Torah does mean by the word Yivama. Right, that's the question, whether we would think the extra word b'yivma teaches her that she's still considered a yava, a yavama for certain purposes. Yeah. So wait. Machzira pshita. Okay, what about I guess we might as well mention it now. So what do we do with the word b'yivma? So we had, first of all, we had in the, back in the first perek, we had according to Rebbe, we learned from it that the tsara is a potter, that the arai is a potter, because you can't do yivam with them. According to the Rabbanon, we learned from it that you can do yivam al kocha. We learned also in the second paragraph we had in connection with the machlokes of Reb Shimon and the Chachamim that we learned from the Yibma that with Eishes Achav Shalahir by Lamai that even though Yibum was already done before this new brother was even born, nevertheless she's still considered the Yavama of the original brother and therefore the new brother is also to her. So we have a lot of different things we learned from the word Yibma. Okay, machzir pshita. What it was saying that she's allowed to remarry her if he divorces her. Well, of course. Why would we think otherwise? And again, safa that chamin. You would think to say like this: mitzvah de rami rachman alei abda. Okay, but you know he did the mitzvah that the Torah wanted. He hashed to take him alei beisur eishes ach. Now maybe the original issue of eishes ach should come back in. Originally she would have been offered to him as eishes ach. The Torah was master for the sake of yibum. He did yibum. Now if he's divorcing her, why should we allow him to remarry her? Gamash Malon, that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. She's his wife for all purposes, so you can remarry her just like you'd remarry. What?
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, we'll be ready in a minute. We'll be done in a minute. The Gemara, can you just wait 2 minutes?
Yeah.
The Gemara asks, the Eima Hachinami? The question is, so who says? You're saying that after all, you have the word v'yibma, and you have the svara of eishasach. Who says, where does the Mishnah get from? That harei ki'ishte l'choldover, that there's no chalitza, and that he's allowed to remarry her. Maybe taka, right? The answer is, amakrov l'kochalo, that Yeshua, the Pasuk says, he takes her for a wife, meaning kivin shalok harei ki'ishte l'choldover. Once he marries her, then she's considered his wife for all purposes. I the word v'yibma, we use the word v'yibma for other since the Pasuk says, well, Kochel Elishi takes her for a wife, and that's that. Then we said, one line, Ravach takes a Vaso Chola. We said that the Ksuba is against the Nechasim of the first husband, not of the second. My timer, why? Isha Hiknu Lamin Hashemayim. Because we say it's not, he didn't marry her of his own will, in a way. The Torah was machna her to him by his brother dying automatically, like she, yeah. The E less lamination. However, if she doesn't have a ksuba from the first one, for whatever reason, let's say he doesn't have any nechasim, Rashi says takino lamisheni. Then indeed, the rabbanon were misakin. She should get a ksuba from her second husband, from the brother, kadesh le'talente kalabe and loisia, so that he doesn't easily want to divorce her. The whole one of the purposes of the ksuba is that the husband shouldn't just jump up and then go divorce his wife. So usually he wouldn't need because you have. But in this case, if the original husband didn't have any nechasim, then there would be.